The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. Good evening and welcome. Welcome, everybody. Nice to see you all. And Happy New Year. And I was thinking as I was driving over here, like, okay, I finally figured out exactly how to work the windshield wipers. It's just because I've had my car for like 10 years, right? But, you know, it doesn't rain so often, and I kind of forget. I'm like, okay, I finally got it. It's been raining and not often enough that I figured it out and have it memorized. So a lot of rain, which is good. I am not going to complain. So maybe to begin with this evening, I'd like you to just imagine, or maybe you don't have to imagine, maybe you can remember a time not so long ago, or maybe you're about to send a message, email, text message, whatever it might be, or you're in traffic and feeling stuck in traffic and feeling a little bit irritated. Or maybe you're getting ready to sleep and then you're remembering, oh yeah, there's that conversation, and you're rehearsing or rehashing this conversation, kind of stuck with going through this. And there's this way in which we can feel it. Like, the mind isn't completely neutral. It's not relaxed and easeful about this. There might be this little pulling towards something. Maybe it's clear what this something is. Maybe it isn't clear. Or maybe there's this pushing away. I don't want that. I want it to be different. Or maybe there's this way that you're just spinning a story and you're just lost in stories, kind of like disconnected from your experience. And there's this way in which sometimes it's easy to forget that when the Buddha was talking about dukkha, this word that often gets translated as suffering, he's also pointing to this subtle pushing and pulling, or being lost or disconnected or lost in fog. This is also dukkha. Even though it just feels like, well, this is what it means to be a human. This is what humans do all the time. But in the Buddhist teachings, they're pointing to, oh, there can be the ending of that. There can be this ease and freedom in which experiences are arising, they're known, and then they pass, and the mind stays steady and balanced. There isn't this pushing and pulling and wanting to make things be a certain way or disconnecting from our experience. So tonight I'd like to talk just a little bit about the Eightfold Path. Perhaps because it's the beginning of the year, and some might say that this is one of the foundational teachings. But I'm not going to go through all eight factors, a list of eight. Instead, I want to talk about how, like, the path as a whole is to help us with this, what we might say are the roots, what's underlying this slight sense of, or maybe obvious sense of, things are not quite right. They're not how I want them to be. Dang it. And even though we keep trying and doing all the things that we do. So we could think of the Eightfold Path as a system, as a course of training, as a way in which to work with our experience, meet our experience, in which helps to pull out the roots of what's underlying so much, all of, actually, we could say, our suffering. And again, I'm using this word dukkha and suffering to represent just this minor little sense of not quite right, and this terrible, horrifying, awful stuff that happens. One word for this giant, giant range. I'll just say briefly, I'll start us off with the Eightfold Path. Many of you will be familiar with this. You do not have to memorize this list. I learned it as right view, right intention, right speech. So we use this word right, but it's the word right is not this moralistic as opposed to wrong. It's more that if it's a Phillips screw that needs to be put in, then you get the right tool. You get a Phillips screwdriver. You don't get a fingernail file or something like this, right? You get the right tool. So right means like the correct or the one that's best for the job that needs to be done, something like that. Some teachers, to get around this word sensitivity of right, sometimes translate it as wise. So we could say wise view, wise intention, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort or energy, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. It's this list of eight, and it's traditionally given in that particular order. I remembered it because somebody casually said something so many years ago that stuck in my head, said Visa Lemsi, V-I-S-A-L-E-M-C, Visa Lemsi. So that's how I remember it. If you're so disposed that you want to remember this list. I think, is it on the bookmark this year, the IMC bookmark? I know, maybe it was last year. I don't know. It just recently, sometimes the annual bookmark that goes out has had the Eightfold Path on there. So I want to talk, so that's the Eightfold Path. And then I want to talk a little bit about these roots of suffering and what do they have to do with each other? What is the Eightfold Path supposed to help us with these roots of suffering? So I'll say just a little bit about these roots of suffering. We could call them greed, aversion, delusion. Greed is a strong word. None of us want to feel like we have greed within us. But it's this want. This feeling of, maybe there's this, like this reach and this little clench, like I need this in order to be happy. I want more of this. This kind of way that this feeling like, okay, as soon as I get that, everything will be okay. This can be big, giant things or small things. Aversion. Sometimes I've learned it first as hatred. And I felt like kind of like greed and hatred went together with these big, strong words. But often we use aversion too. You can use whichever word you like, greed or aversion. Of course, this is maybe like the push, this, I don't want this, but it's also maybe this impulse to correct or punish or cut off or escape. This bracing of no, I don't want this. I want this gone. So that's the second root. And the third is delusion. I could say this fog, this not seeing clearly. And there's so many things that we don't see clearly. But we could see one way of understanding this is maybe we see the stories that the mind is making, but there's a way in which we believe them. And that is delusion, not recognizing that the stories that are getting made up in our mind are, in fact, stories. We're convinced that they're facts because, well, we're thinking them, so they must be true, right? So there's this way that what makes these the roots, greed, hatred, and delusion, greed, aversion, and delusion of all dukkha, all suffering, is that there is this way in which they drive patterns. They have these like grooves in the mind, and they're kind of like the fuel that sends us down these well-worn grooves in the mind. These patterns are what we say, what we do, how we interpret things, what we chase, what we resist. Right? Some of these are just so deeply ingrained. Sometimes we don't even notice that their patterns are even optional. So I want to be clear, it's not character flaws that we want things and we don't want other things and that we don't have clarity about everything. It's just what it means to be human. It's part of what it means to have a nervous system and to have developed as a human in the way that humans develop. So I don't want to say that it's hardwired because there is freedom from them. But I heard this analogy. I'm not a computer expert, but somebody was describing it. It's kind of like firmware, that it's not as easy to change as software, but it's not hardwired either. So it's firmware in there. It can get updated. It can get changed. So maybe I'll just give a little example here. Maybe you receive a message, text message, email, all the different ways we can text you, Slack. I don't know. There's so many, right? It's amazing how many there are. And then in this, someone maybe like questions a decision you made, or maybe they misunderstood your intent, or maybe they are saying something that lands is a tone that doesn't feel comfortable at all. And we might say the greed here shows up as, no, I want to be understood. I want people to really understand what I'm trying to say. Or I want respect. I want people to treat me with respect. Or I want to be right. They didn't understand what I said. I understood it. Or, you know, maybe this could be some of the greed. Or aversion is like, oh, this isn't fair. Why are they saying this? I have to do this. Or why is that department not doing that? Or maybe there's this way, this aversion of like, oh, no. And maybe there's some heat that arises, some contraction, this irritation, like, oh, really? This again? Or maybe the way that delusion shows up often really fast. And the sense of maybe the story, quote unquote, is like, oh, yeah, of course, this person is sending this email saying this. Or that department always does this. Or maybe there's this way, they don't value me. They're taking me for granted. Or maybe there's a way that just like this, we feel threatened in some kind of way that might not even be clear to us. So greed, aversion, and delusion can just show up like in an instant, and maybe just as soon as we open up a message and read it. And maybe all three of them, whew, are there in a moment. But there can be this, maybe there's this way that this moment where we have our fingers on the keyboard, ready to reply, and instead we either just say, well, I can just follow this path of greed, aversion, and delusion, push, pull, fog. Or maybe I can do an experiment. Maybe I can do something a little bit different. Maybe the experiment is very small. It's simply not hitting send yet. And taking 10 breaths. And just seeing if something different can arise. Maybe we still feel that clench, the irritation, the aversion, the wanting to be understood, whatever it might be. Maybe that's still there while we're just taking this 10 breaths, 5 breaths, however many. And we just recognize, here's the story that I have, and I'm pretty sure this is true, but just to even recognize that it's a story. This is already, just this little experiment is the beginning of this Eightfold Path showing up in our lives, showing up in a way in which we can find more freedom, more ease, more peace. I would say what we're looking for. But a kind of training that is going to help with this apparatus that is so fast and such a so habitual way to respond to experiences is a training that needs to meet us at different levels, deeper, more shallow, different avenues in, different aspects of our lives. A training that's really going to help us with this firmware, quote unquote, of greed, aversion, and delusion. Needs to be a reliable path that we can apply not just once in a while, but in so many different areas of our life. So, we could say that the Eightfold Path is this training system, I'll use this word, training system, that can help meet us at three depths. three depths of our experience designed to weaken and eventually end greed, aversion, and delusion, to diminish and eventually end suffering. So these three levels, one could be the levels of actions, how we're showing up in the world, what we do and what we say. Two, the level of our mental events, our inner life, what's happening inside, the urges, the moods, the stories. And three, the third level is these deep tendencies to help us see some of these patterns, some of these grooves in which we find in our lives. We find ourselves falling into again and again and again. So actions, mind states, and deep tendencies, these three different levels in which the Eightfold Path can help us see and uproot greed, aversion, and delusion, these causes of suffering, what's underlying suffering. And so the Eightfold Path, many of you will be familiar with this, not everybody necessarily, that it's often categorized into three different trainings: ethics, mental development, and wisdom, sila, samadhi, panya. And ethics and sila, we could say this is the way that it works with how what we say and do in the world. That's one level of our the way the Eightfold Path can support us finding more freedom. Mental development is this way in which it can help us, which includes effort, meditation, and concentration, which is a way that can help us to start to see, oh, the habits of the mind, some of these, and allow the body and the mind to quiet so that we can start to see some of the surge of emotion, the pushing and the pulling, or the disconnecting. Often we can't see them in just our everyday mind because they're so habitual. It's just the usual way of being in the world. So meditation helps us to see that more clearly and to change our relationship to it. I'll speak a little bit more about that in a moment. And then wisdom, that helps us to maybe uproot them. But before I go into more depth about each of these, sila, samadhi, panya, ethics, meditation, wisdom, I want to make a note about the order of the path elements. For me, I got a little confused about this when I first learned about it. So I gave the list as visa lemsi, starting with right view, right insight. I just talked about sila, samadhi, panya, ethics, meditation, wisdom. So the way that the list is that we talk about them and the way it shows up in every single sutta that includes this, exactly the same. It starts with view and insight. When it's taught as a path of practice, it always starts with ethics, because it's part of a gradual training, this idea that if you have ethics first, it helps create the conditions which makes meditation easier, and having meditation helps wisdom to arise. So it's taught with starting with ethics, and then how it's usually practiced today is people start with meditation because they wanted to reduce stress. They wanted to have a better life. They thought that meditation might help. So they find themselves meditating and then wanting to take it a little bit further. And part of the reason why they want to take it a little bit further is because with meditation, they start to have a little bit of insight and maybe to have some understandings that they didn't have before. And then that starts to open up the idea about ethics, how we show up in the world. So for me, I'm kind of fascinated by this, that there's three different ways in which we can enter this Eightfold Path. It doesn't matter where you enter. It's just our tradition. We talk about it in one way. We talk about training in a second way. And what actually happens is a third way. And maybe that's kind of how things are. you know, so much of the, that we are, we want it, this practice, whatever practice we're talking about, meets us where we are. It's not asking us to be somebody completely different. So maybe I'll say something. It starts with right view, and I just want to say something about this. One way we could say that, why in the traditional classical way it's listed, is because right view is about being the compass, the direction, where we're going. It's like having this, okay, we're going over here, and our intentions are going to help us go over here. So any starting point is great, I would say. And whichever door we enter through this Eightfold Path, it becomes a cycle. One training helps support the other ones. Okay, so with that as a little thing on the side about the order of these path vectors and the way that they get taught and the way that we actually practice them, I'll start with what is traditionally the first training, ethics, sila. Working at the level of our actions, what we say and what we do. This doesn't require any meditation. It doesn't require any wisdom. But it's this commitment of maybe not wanting to create more harm in the world. Not more harm for ourselves, not more harm for others. And this is the way that greed, aversion, and delusion shows up. It shows up as causing harm. And maybe this harm is small and slight. Maybe it's really painful and awful for a lot of people. Maybe you could say that you know you're practicing ethics when you recognize, oh, there's an impulse to maybe say something that's maybe an exaggeration to make yourself look better, or maybe a little white lie because it's just easier to just kind of say what somebody's expecting you to say rather than what might actually be the truth. I've told this story a number of times, but this had a big impact on me somebody had given me some clothes that, you know, about like my size or something like this. And so I thought, oh, okay, I'll try these on. And it was yet another person that, just the occasion was, it was another person that saw me try these on. And there was just a blouse that I really liked. And, I put it on and I asked this other person, what do you think? And the person said, oh, those are nice pants. I'm like, no. The blouse, what do you think of this blouse? Yeah, those are nice pants. Like, oh, I get it. They don't want to say, you know, Diane, that actually looks awful on you. Please take it off. There was just this way that they were kind of communicating. That was the only way they could think probably in the moment to not say actually something that might have been uncomfortable for me to hear. But I don't know, the way they said it, it just made me smile. Like, oh, this person cares about me. They don't want me to walk around in something they think is terrible. And they don't want to hurt my feelings either. So they found a way, a creative way. And I appreciate this very much. So you know you're practicing ethics when you find yourself not telling little white lies, instead maybe some creative ways in which you can tell the truth that are helpful. Or maybe you're not taking more than is needed from the office, whatever that might be. Back when I worked in an office, we still had paper and, and post-it notes and pens and paper. I'm assuming offices still have that, but not so much anymore, right? But I would find myself at home with post-it notes and pens and paper that I didn't, yeah, I would just take them from the office before I really had a practice, realize, oh, I might need these at home. But maybe the ethical thing is just not to take more than what is freely offered, more than what you need. It's not that we have to be like perfect. It's not about moral perfectionism. it's about no longer reinforcing these habits of greed, aversion, delusion. It's about finding a way in which it's different than being fueled by that greed, aversion, and delusion. So that's the ethical part of the Eightfold Path, right? Speech and right action. That's one way that can meet us with one level. It's a training that meets us at the level of our activity in the world. The next training, meditation, sometimes called mental development, and in Pali, we use this word samadhi, but working at the level of the mental states, like what's the inner weather? Like what's happening inside? It trains us to notice, oh yeah, when is this push, this wanting? Or when, oh, I guess that's pull, or this push, not wanting. And when is there disconnection or fogginess? Having a meditation practice helps us become more sensitive to the different states that happen in the mind instead of just always getting pushed around by them. It helps us to notice experiences as sensations, urges, moods, stories, and just to see them arise and pass away. Often we don't see them arise and pass away. We just immediately, there's a mood and then boom, we're saying something or doing something. So meditation practice helps us to see them without necessarily immediately going into saying something or doing something. That is, it helps us to relate to our experiences differently so that we can maybe feel the stress, the discomfort, the contraction and greed, aversion, and delusion. And then learning that we don't have to act on the impulses. We can just experience them, allowing them to arise and pass away. And then when we do this, when we can see these urges or surges and allow them to arise and pass away, with meditation, does it help us not only to manage the surges, but it helps us understand what keeps fueling them, what keeps lighting these fires of greed, aversion, and delusion. And that leads us to this third training, wisdom, right view and right intention. This is working at the level of deep tendencies, the grooves, these views that we have that so often we don't even know that we have them. We could say that wisdom is just seeing repeatedly that craving doesn't bring lasting happiness, even though we so often are defaulting to this, thinking like, okay, everything will be fine as soon as I have this, as soon as that goes away. And with meditation, we start to see this craving over and over and over again. And we start to learn, oh yeah, even though we've seen it so many times, it doesn't like stop and then we're just perpetually happy afterwards. It just keeps on happening. And there's this certain wisdom of, oh yeah, this craving isn't a way to bring lasting happiness. Instead, what we start to see is things are changing. They're unreliable. It's fruitless if we keep on expecting something out there to make us be happy. It's always changing. It's not reliable. It hasn't ever made us happy in the past. And then delusion, we could say, starts to wear thin when maybe with some help with some meditation, we see how often we build this me, this self, out of these experiences that are rising and passing, that keep on coming and going, and they aren't a source of lasting happiness. And yet there's this me that's getting created out of our roles. I'm the one who's, I don't know, right now I'm in the role of a Dharma teacher, but when I was spending time with my mom, who is not a practitioner whatsoever, that would not have gone over so well if I showed up. up as the Dharma teacher. Right? There's a way, and sometimes we take these roles very seriously. And we say, no, you have to treat me a certain way. I have to behave a certain way. All these things. What successes we've had or failures we've had. We start to build a self out of this. What mood we're in or what thoughts we have. And then we spend the rest of the day defending it. Whatever happens to be the one that we're experiencing that day, that moment, that hour. And just seeing this over and over, maybe how often we build this solid me, and it's not always this me that's getting reified, that's getting constructed, that's getting created. It isn't always the same one. Sometimes we're the one that, you know, oh yeah, okay, I'm the one that can figure out how to pack the car efficiently. They can't do that. I'm the one that can do that. Or I'm the one that can read the map and navigate us. Well, I guess we have Google Maps these days. They just tell us. Maybe we don't need navigators in the way we used to. But this is what weakens these latent tendencies towards greed, aversion, and delusion, is to see these again and again and again. And often we don't see them unless we have a meditation practice. We have a time in which we kind of are quiet and settled. And we can see these mental states that are arising repeatedly. And maybe I'll talk about these three trainings in this everyday example. Maybe I'll say, partly because this path, it has to work at three different levels because it has to work in our life. It's not just something that happens, you know, on a meditation cushion or that we hear in a Dharma talk or read in a Dharma book or something like this. It needs to be applicable at all levels of our lives. But let's say that you're driving and someone cuts you off, or maybe you're in line and someone steps ahead. There can be this urge, and there's this way, like these are small things, but the inner reaction can be really strong. Or they could be slight, mild also. But there can be this aversion, this heat that surges, or maybe this argument. No, you can't do that. Excuse me. You know, like telling that person what to do or something like this. Or the urge to blame, or I don't know, the urge to do something like this. And maybe there's this greed of wanting control, of wanting respect, or wanting your plan to go your way. And maybe there's this delusion that comes with this story. People around here drive terribly. Sometimes I find myself saying this when I go to visit my family in another town, and I'm like, oh, people here, they just drive so... It's so funny how I just find myself noticing just driving is different in different, locations. Or maybe there's this way we have these stories of like people are always like this towards me or something like this. Or people are terrible in general or something like this. But it's possible to see when this person cuts you off or stands in front of you in line or whatever it might be. It's possible just to see clearly, just to feel clearly. Oh, here's a little bit of heat arising, some clenching, some story. And then just to notice that this all arises and then passes away. And right there, ethics, you didn't escalate. Didn't say or do something that maybe wasn't so helpful or skillful. Or maybe meditation, the mental development, you say, well, you just felt that surge and the heat is just surge and a heat. And delusion, wisdom, you saw the cost of clinging to this story. You saw that, oh yeah, the more that I cling to these stories, the less freedom I have. The less peace, peace and ease there is that I experience. So the Eightfold Path has these eight different elements. I talked about really just three trainings: ethics, meditation or mental development, and wisdom. And they help to uproot these roots of greed, aversion, and delusion, these roots that fuel and support suffering. And the Eightfold Path, it works at different levels, different parts of the path work at different levels. That's one way we can understand it. The Eightfold Path is so rich. There's a different way in which we could look at the aspects rather than levels. We can look at it more as a progression, for example. But because the Eightfold Path has so many different elements that work in so many different ways, these old habits of there's a trigger, there's a craving, I want it, or I want it to go away, and then there's a reaction that just can feel so fast. There's this way that with this Eightfold Path, right, view, intention, speech, action, livelihood, effort, meditate, mindfulness, and concentration, can maybe this habit loop of trigger, craving, reaction gets undermined, gets softened from so many different angles that allows these underlying roots of greed, aversion, and delusion to be uprooted. And then maybe I'll end with, there's this way in which, you know, I've been talking about the end of greed, aversion, and delusion, which sounds nice, but maybe it's not so inspiring. What's not explicit, but what is part of the experience, is happiness is arising. As greed, aversion, and delusion are going down, happiness and joy are going up. The more we practice, the more ease and more happiness there is, the more delight, the more peace and ease. So that could have been another frame I could have used to talk about the Eightfold Path, is that this appreciation for simplicity, honesty, clarity just brings more and more happiness in our lives. And this, of course, impacts our lives and then everybody that we're in contact with. So the Eightfold Path, as a way from different aspects, different levels, we might say, is to help the uprooting of greed, aversion, and delusion, and to bring happiness and peace and ease. And my wish for all of you for 2026, and every day and every year, but it's the beginning of the year, so I'll say for 2026, may your life, may you experience more and more happiness and peace and ease. May you find freedom and support for your practice and your life, so that it nourishes and supports not only you, but those you're in contact with. And in this way, we can make a world in which we want to live in, all of us want to live in, with more peace and more ease. So thank you. And with that, I'll open it up to see if there's some comments or questions. Thank you. If you really don't want to speak in the microphone, you don't have to. You can speak loudly, and I'll repeat your question.
It's okay. I think I just got a little bit didn't follow exactly when you talked about the three levels, because I thought I heard I thought I heard at some point kind of levels of intensity, you know, like you talked about the range of dukkha.
Oh.
And then I heard levels of that seemed a little bit more like the progression, you know, starting with ethics and then meditation, insight, then wisdom. Those were kind of different levels, kind of almost like levels of where you are into of insight.
I see.
So if you could clarify.
Yeah. Thank you. So here's the good news, that it doesn't matter, this range of dukkha, from, you know, really mild to really terrible, the same training works for everywhere on that path, the most awful to the most subtle. So maybe that's a single point. And then the three levels were about our actions, our mental states, and then the deep grooves. And these three different levels, we could also say, maps onto Sila Samadhi Panya, ethics, meditation, and wisdom. Wait, is that helpful?
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. I know there was a lot of moving parts in there. There was also three roots, and so I could have thrown in eight factors and, you know, just make a whole salad out of it.
It was a pretty impressive amount of stuff that you did cover in a short amount of time, though, I have to say.
I kind of wanted to start the year with, you know, something like this.
Yeah, the overview.
Yeah.
It's really helpful.
Oh, does Bill was... Okay.
It's okay. I thought someone there was raising their hand.
Well, it helps me to hear you reiterate the idea of these deep grooves, or I think of them as patterns, mm-hmm. that are really mm-hmm. deeply embedded in us.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I've been doing this for 25 years. Feel like I'm pretty practiced, pretty studied. I'll be in a social situation and bang, something that I didn't see coming just comes out of me. And it's not a good thing. You know, I say something really angry or mean or something. It was there all along. But going through everyday life, there's not much that brings it up. But it's down there. And it's hard to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's hard to uproot accordingly. And maybe the best thing for me is to lose it sometimes so that I can see it.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
With clarity. And then, boy, then there's motivation to, you know, excavate and see and understand and dissolve it.
Interesting. I'm
starting to say something.
Yeah. So my the model that I have is a little bit different, is that... it's more like if it seems like there's a real depth of the greed, aversion, delusion, whatever, just having little sips regularly, it starts to go down and down and down. So you so frequent undoing of greed, aversion, and delusion is a way so that it's no longer so deep, and it just starts to come up with less ferocity, less strength, because what's happening at the same time is this sense of me is also getting softened. And often things come back really strong when we feel, you know, threatened in some kind of way or disrespected, or I don't know what it might be. So these two things are happening at the same time. The sense of self is getting a little bit more soft and porous, and the greed, aversion, and delusion, we're getting more and more familiar with what it feels like, and just like, oh yeah, okay, there's a little bit of greed there, and not acting on it. And each time we don't act on it, kind of like undermines the depth or magnitude of it or something like this. How does this sound?
It sounds good, but I'm not sure it really grapples with those deeper or deepest and most invisible patterns.
Yeah, is this fantastic? It's the only way to find out is to try it, right? Because you don't believe me, right? Then you have to do the experiment, right? You have to see, okay, is it going to work? You have to. In my life, it has. I'll say that.
Thank you, Diane.
You're welcome. Okay, so here we are. Thank you. Thank you for your kind attention. And I wish you safe travels home in the rain. And have a wonderful rest of your evening. Thank you.